Mrs. Pravda, Reel 4. Now, when you were being selected at Auschwitz for the Krupps works, were you personally selected to go?
Obviously I was, because otherwise I would have stayed in Auschwitz. Again, we were not given any information at all. What work, who chose the girls to work in the armament factories, who chose the girls to work in the forest. They didn't talk to us at all. And I remember a particular friend, which I can't forget, I don't know what happened to her. She was pregnant in the last stages of pregnancy, and she stood there naked, and she turned to me and she said, they assure me that when I give birth to the baby, I will be sent to work, I won't be gassed, but I know they're going to kill that baby. And I looked into her eyes and I said, oh, perhaps not. And she said, oh, yes. The couple told me they give them injections, they kill them. And I think that was the most tragic things I have seen in my life. Because she was doomed. I don't know if she was doomed herself, but certainly her baby was doomed. And that particular evening, I behaved like the old Job in the Bible. I was really cursing God and saying, if you are there and if you have any power, do something. And there must be millions of ghosts walking around. And of course nothing happened. So after that hell, the transport to working group was a great release.
And where were you taken to work?
Well, we didn't know. We were put on an open little train, and we were driven a few miles away, or more miles away, I can't count. And we came into a thick, beautiful pine forest. And then we were chased out of the train. You see, they did everything with hysterical shouting. There was nothing calm about the Germans. Whenever they had to drive people from one place to another, they started to wave their batons and their pistols and shouting like mad. And it needed a great discipline from the prisoners not to fall into a complete panic. Some of the girls started to say, they are going to kill us now, they are going to kill us now. And I said, no, of course not. Why the hell should they bring us from a hell like Auschwitz, where they had the gas, to kill us in the middle of the forest to shoot us? Don't be silly. We are going to work here. And sure enough, they erected tents for 1,000 people, and next day they gave us shovels, and we were supposed to dig trenches against the coming Russian army.
Can you tell me how the work was performed?
Well, we were digging. We were working 12 hours a day. We were digging a trench as deep till we came in onto water. I would say, I can't judge it really, about 15 meters deep. And we were shoveling the wet sand from downstairs up, 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 till it was right on the platform up there. And that was our work. It was a very hard work, but on the other hand, the supervising German were freezing as well, so they were walking up and down. They couldn't know how much wet sand we had on the shovel, because we shook half of it off again. But it was a perpetual movement which kept us warm but kept us very hungry and very exhausted. So by the evening we fell in the tent and slept like logs.
Which was the worst work in the trenches?
The worst was down by the water, because the sand was weighing a lot, and to throw it up these 4 or 5 yards was really very exhausting. So we changed in the shift without anybody telling us to change. So a girl worked half an hour or at most an hour down, and then she went up to the middle trench, which was much easier. And again, it was very hard for the girl up, because it was terribly windy and cold. She was the one who was leveling the ground. And again she changed to the middle position, which was the best one, every hour at least. So by the end of the day, we all changed places many times. And the Germans didn't object, they couldn't care less. Sometimes as fun, they threw somebody into the water, calling us Pappschachtel, which I didn't understand what it means, just a box of dirt or something. And they thought it's hilariously funny. There were little ladders, you see, leading from the bottom up there. And sometimes when somebody was climbing on that ladder, they overturned the ladder. Great fun. They had to amuse themselves somehow. So you can imagine if your clothes are wet and standing in the middle of a forest, it was sometimes 10, 15, 20 under zero. You were frozen. But strangely enough, because the atmosphere was pure, no germs, there was very little cold. Very, very little cold.
Did the Germans use Alsatian dogs here?
Yes, they adored them. They actually were very cruel to the dogs, because I saw by chance how they trained a young dog by beating him immediately he was near a prisoner. So it looked like if the prisoner was beating the dog. And they let the dog smell the clothes of the prisoner, and then the dog was beaten. So whenever later he smelled this particular scent, he went for the prisoner. And they woke us up in the morning by letting the dogs on a long leash, not completely free, because we would have been bitten very much, on the paper bags where we were sleeping under, to wake us by the attack of the dogs. Great fun.
I think that you said that the Germans themselves were not clothed properly against the cold.
No, amazingly enough, they didn't have any fur or any padded jackets. They were in their normal German uniforms with high boots, and I saw them sort of stamping their feet on the ground. And it must have been freezing, not doing anything, watching these women to work for all these hours. So they themselves probably were not very happy, but on the other hand, they were very happy not to fight on the front. So they were cherishing these jobs to watch over us. And they didn't want us to die, except two or three. One day, a girl tried to escape from the camp, because the camp wasn't terribly watched. It was in the middle of the forest. There were not the electric wires as they were in Auschwitz. The girl escaped. The girl was caught by the lovely peasants in the surroundings, in the village. She was returned to the camp and she was hung. She was executed. So none of us wanted to escape anymore.
Did you all have to witness the execution?
I didn't witness the execution, some of them.
What were the men's health problems?
Exhaustion, undernourishment, gastroenteritis. And then through the dirty clothes, which one day arrived in the camp, they saw that we could not work without anything proper. So they brought some extra coats. And these coats were contaminated with lice, absolutely crawling with lice. And we were forced to put them on. And from then on, it was hell. And I think this is how the typhus epidemic started, because until then, there was not a case of typhus. But the lice must have brought it. And I think it was worse than hunger. If I had to choose between being hungry and being bitten by lice every day, I would always choose hunger. Because after some days, you know, you stop being terribly hungry. Your stomach shrinks. It's not such a torture as people imagine. You get weaker, you get very light-headed. And the lice, of course, torture you day and night. But I used to undress naked, completely naked, and put all the things over me, plus the paper bag, which made a terrible noise. And in the morning, the paper bags were covered with snow and hoar. But strangely enough, the lice are so lazy that they don't leave the clothes. They stick to the coats. And they left me in peace during the night, which was blissful. I still had my men's shoes with straw inside, so I was in a luxury. No underwear, but feeling quite safe. The poor people who had small shoes or evening shoes, they had their feet frozen. And I know about two or three who lost all the toes on their feet, and they were sent immediately after the war. I know about one particular girl who was sent to England, because England was the only place where they could, I don't know, it's in Roehampton, I believe, where they could provide her with support. And she was a beautiful 18-year-old, and she said to me then in Prague, "Hannah, they repaired me so well, I can go dancing."
You were telling me earlier about the fact that life in the camps polarized the behavior of prisoners towards each other.
Well, in this particular small camp in the forest, there wasn't any more of the bad side of the prisoners to be seen. There was one rich lady who somehow, by miracle, had one needle. A needle became as important as for Robinson Crusoe. And we used to tear from the coats little strings, and she lent us the needle. And from the lining of the coat, she made me gloves. Can you imagine the blissful thing of gloves? And we were carrying, now I remember, we were not only falling trees and digging out, we were carrying some bricks, God knows how and why. Bricks unloading and loading, and I had these beautiful gloves made out of this material, only due to Mrs. Miller, who had the one needle in the camp. Now, people were very kind to each other, very, very loving, very kind. There wasn't, again, not one scene of fight or hate or stealing or anything like it at all.
Mrs. Miller, was she English?
No, she wasn't. She was Austrian. That's an Austrian name as well. And Mrs. Miller was the one who was thrown into water by the SS as great joke. But she recovered.
You were also telling me how you once thought you were going to be sent back to Auschwitz because you had a cough, and how you cured it.
Yes, well, I had this old bronchitis, and then I had asthma, and I had terrific attacks of this in the tent. And as we were sleeping in this proximity, 50 girls together, I keep barking, not coughing, all night, sitting up. And the girls were a bit annoyed with that because they needed to sleep very badly. And I was afraid that one day the SS could hear me coughing, and that was a sure thing that they would send me back to Auschwitz to be gassed. It happened to two or three who couldn't stand the work. And I told myself, now you're not going to die, you're going to stop coughing. But how? How, I don't know. It penetrated my subconscious, obviously. And during the night, I ran tremendous fever suddenly. It must have been 100, 102 or something, sweated like mad in the cold. And the next day, there was no coughing. I cured myself. And it was just about a few days before this death march started that I don't think I would have been able to walk with that particular cough. So one can cure oneself, but again, in peacetime, people say, how is it done? Under terrific pressure, when you are really in danger of death. I don't think one can do it under normal circumstances.
You also told me about a 16-year-old girl who survived typhus.
No, she wasn't 16, she was 12. She was 12 years old. She was the daughter of the supervisor, capo, who was one of the prisoners, but who was in charge of organizing work. And she was a Hungarian woman. She dragged this child through Auschwitz saying this tall blonde girl is 16 and she was only 12 years old. And when we came to this, Birnbäumer was the name of the village, Birnbäumer, which means trees of pears, pear trees. She hit that child. The child got typhus. We all knew about it. Nobody talked about it. The child was covered with all the paperbacks in the corner of the tent all day. The mother had to go and work with us on the trenches. And when we came back, she fed the child. She gave her her own portion and a lot of hot water. And the child recovered. And I met them later in Slovakia, and they were both all right.
When you were told to march westwards, were you given the alternative of going or staying?
No, the people who could not march were given the opportunity to stay behind in the tents. And some of them took this opportunity. And we said goodbye to them with the feeling that perhaps they may be killed. Because the answer of Germans to anybody who was not able-bodied was kill, kill, kill. These people really could not walk, certainly not in the snow. And they stayed behind, and later on we heard that this particular group was left alone, and the Russians came in another 2 days and found these girls and saved them. While in the neighboring camp, which again we didn't know was only about 5 miles away from us on the same trench, all the girls who chose to stay were shot. So it depended entirely on the mood of the SS commandant if he decided to kill these people or just leave them behind.
I think you said the other camp was Mrs. Alec's camp.
That's right, that's right. And they were marching in front of us, always a day in front. We started to march on the 24th of January, and they started on the 23rd, I believe. So whenever we stopped, we saw traces of their march, you see. And later on, comparing memories, they stopped in the same places as we did, but ahead of us.
Were you marked?
We were marked before the march. Suddenly, big containers with red lacquer arrived in the camp. And again, in complete blindness, not knowing what's going on, we were told to queue, and each of us was marked on the back of the clothing with a huge red cross. But being obviously very lucky, when it came to my group, which was the very last among the 1,000 people, they ran out of this color. So my coat was not marked, and of course that helped me later on in escaping from that march, because nobody could guess where I came from.
How long was it before you escaped?
I escaped on the 5th day. This is why I thought it must be 24th when we started to march, because I escaped on my birthday, on the 29th of January. Before I escaped, we marched without food, and people were falling off. People were falling in the snow. And one of my best friends in the group, Mary, I don't know her other name. You see, these are the lapses of memory. I loved her, and I've forgotten her surname. She was called Maria. And we were dreaming about the end of the war, taking a hot bath. More than about food, taking a hot bath. That was the dream. And she marched next to me, and suddenly she sat in the snow, and she said, I'm not going further. And we picked her up from both sides. We marched always in fives, group of five, group of five, group of five. And we picked her up and put her on her feet and marched again. And again she sat in the snow. And I saw in her eyes she was going mad. Her eyes clouded. She stopped responding to talk. She looked completely unaware where she was. And eventually she fell into the snow, and SS men rushed to her and shot her through the head. And I marched on because he didn't have any sense to stop by her. And so it happened. And then girls started to run into the forest. And when they ran in groups during daylight, again, most of them were murdered. Perhaps not the first one who vanished in the forest, but the second and the third was shot. So I told myself, I won't stand this longer than 5 days. I felt I'd rather die. It hasn't got any sense to marching on an empty stomach. I will fall down and be like a sheep. So I talked to a girl next to me who was 17, not yet. I said, Veera, do you want to escape with me? She said, yes. I said, all right, the next time we come to a building, because they decided to feed us after 4 days. And we came to an empty factory. And they stopped us and they brought some potatoes, hot potatoes, boiled potatoes, which were actually destined for a local sugar factory, I think, something like that, or some sort of place. And while they were distributing the food, both of us walked very slowly, but very, very slowly. There was no running away. Behind the corner of the building, and stood there till the whole march started again. And it was getting very dark, as it was January. And I told my friend, please stay put till it's going to be completely dark. But she was freezing. She was younger than I was. She had less patience. And she said, I am going to freeze here. I am going to freeze here. I can't anymore. So when we thought that the march was already, the march was very slow, you can imagine, far enough, we walked into the middle of the road of this half-empty village. It was half-empty. Some of the Germans ran already away. Some were still obviously there. And as we walked into the middle of the road, some young boys, Hitlerjugend, came running to us. And they were not lazy enough. They were bloodthirsty enough to take a bicycle and run after the march and tell them that two prisoners escaped. So one of the SS men came riding back on a bicycle. And he was a man we knew from the camp of having a nervous breakdown. His family was bombed out in Breslau. His family was killed. And in the last day before the march, he was walking from one tent to another saying, this is madness, this is madness. Strangely enough, his name was Sasha Alexander, just like my husband's. He must have been Polish by origin. And he told the boys, I'm going to shoot these two women in the forest. Go away. And the crows will eat their eyes. It was very colorful. And he wanted, obviously, to chase the boys away. And he told us, you're going to be shot in the forest. And the forest was about 100 yards away from that road. And I was in a wonderful mood. Therefore, I think dying is not too bad. Suddenly, I was absolutely lighthearted. I thought this life is pretty awful. There's snow everywhere, the killing everywhere. I felt really happy. It's a very strange experience. A sort of enlightened, like if you said goodbye to your body and couldn't care less. There was no fear. And I sat in the snow and told him, you can shoot me here. I'm not going to walk up to the forest uphill. And my little girlfriend said, oh, Hannah, please don't be melodramatic. As she knew I was an actress, she thought, I'm performing. I wasn't performing. I really couldn't care less. And that man took me by the collar and put me on my feet and slapped my face and said, "March." So we walked, and in the beginning he walked behind us with his bicycle, leading the bicycle. And then he overtook us and walked in front of us. And having been a reader of all the West, Wild West stories, I told my friend, "He's not going to kill us." She said, "Why not?" I said, "Because if you want to kill somebody, you walk behind him, not in front of him." And she was hurrying with her wooden shoes. She had wooden shoes on, sort of clogs. And I said, "Don't hurry, he's not going to kill us." And I started to talk to him in German. And I said, "What's the point of shooting us? We're young, and the war is lost. And you know it's lost. And you hear the Russian shooting. You can escape. What's the point?" And he got on his bicycle and he rode away. And then we stood there in this darkness, in this snow village. And we said, "To the left or to the right?" And we rushed to the right house and we knocked on the door, and the woman opened the door. And there all my equilibrium, all my philosophy, all my religion collapsed. And we start to get completely hysterical, both of us, shouting, "They want to kill us, they want to kill us, please, please leave us here." That poor woman was a widow, a war widow, a German woman. And her name was Mrs. Milde, and if she's still alive, I thank her. Mrs. Milde. She had a little girl, and her husband was killed on the front. And she closed the door, and she looked at us with our shaved heads and our rags. And she gave us some milk. And she said, "I can't keep you here because there is opposite the house where we very nearly went in, a SS teacher, a real Nazi, and he would kill you with his own hands. So you were pretty lucky to get into my house."